Good morning. Welcome. It's the Ask the Pastor program on the Messenger of Good News Worldwide, KFUO. KFUO is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thanks again to Pastor Tom Handrick for our lesson in Luke chapter 2, verses 21 to 40. Let's see now, what did we cover in that? We covered the circumcision and naming of Jesus. We covered the purification of Mary. We covered Simeon, Anna, and just a very, very brief mention of the early life of Jesus. And I think Pastor Handrick did an excellent job with that. But if you didn't get a chance to get in with a question or a comment about that text, you can do so now, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or KFUO at KFUO.org. Welcoming back to the microphone, Chaplain Keith Wise from Lutheran Senior Services at Merrimack Bluffs. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Well, guard your health, because as I was mentioning to you as I was looking at the weather forecast, it's going to go from 25 to 19 to 40 to 20 to, and then Monday it's supposed to be almost 60.
Oh, variety is the spice of life, right?
Says you. Says you. You know, there's something about sitting on a beach in Fiji where the temperature never changes. It's always consistently hot.
And then we'd complain about that, too.
Well, with perspective of St. Louis, I think not.
Not for a while.
You only complain about what you've got.
Not for a while.
That's true. Hey, speaking of complaint, oh, you weren't complaining. That might be a bit strong. I mentioned last hour that I noticed on Facebook, you have a new member of the family.
We do indeed.
That's apparently keeping you up at night.
Our newest daughter, Catherine Grace Renee, or Katie as she's known at home, will be a year old next month.
Congratulations. So,
yeah, she was staying up a little late last night, but finally she found her comfy spot and went to sleep. So.
Yeah, did you?
I did indeed. Very quickly after she did, yes.
I found an article this morning. I thank goodness I saw that on Facebook that you put this up. This comes from, where is this? The London Daily Telegraph. It's a newspaper in the United Kingdom. Now, you have to take pounds and translate them through euros and then shekels and denarii and all the rest of that stuff until you get to dollars. But what it means is that it's about $400,000 to raise a child these days. Just slide of that, 300 and something thousand.
Doesn't surprise me much.
How are you going to do it? You have how many?
$1 at a time.
That's right. You have how many
now? To do it? Two grown. Tanner's 25. Allie's 23. Abby is 7. And Katie is 11 months.
All right. So you need, for the last two, you need about $750,000.
I'm going to have to get another job, I'm afraid.
Does the ministry pay that well?
Well, what we're thankful for is that between the two of us, we have enough for what we need and some of what we want, and everyone is well taken care of and have our needs supplied, and God gives what we need, and we thank him for it.
Do you think articles like this are geared to maybe make people consider whether or not they want to have children?
That's part of it. You know, do you really want to have this burden your whole life? Look how expensive it is. Look what you'll have if you don't have any children. Oh, it's such a pain to have kids. When in truth,
you won't have any stuff left for yourself.
Well, that's the idea.
Really?
When you have kids, you suddenly realize it's not about me. It's about these other folks. It's about me loving them and providing for them and giving to them and being there for them. Suddenly, you know, what has always been true becomes so much more apparent in everyday life. You're not nearly as important as you think you are for your own sake, but you're vitally important for other folks in life.
There's a section of the article that says how to cut the cost of bringing up your children. The good news is that children cost less. They get cheaper as they get older.
Oh, really?
I think they have no idea.
Who did this research?
This was in England. This is who did the research? Insurance companies in England.
Oh, well, maybe insurance-wise, perhaps they get
less
expensive.
You know what's going to happen?
But I haven't seen that yet.
My oldest turned 16 in a couple of months.
Yep.
And the insurance company doesn't care if we don't let her drive. Our rates are still going up.
Your rates are still going up.
Because we have a 16-year-old.
Yes, indeed.
Because the potential is there for her to drive.
Yep.
We're ruined, I tell you, ruined!
Nah, we'll be just fine. What's funny about those stories is they come out very regularly. You know, they want to get people's attention. You got to have a gimmick to say, oh, what's going on with kids. But what story don't you see about kids? You don't see the everyday life and the blessings that children are in families and that loving families are to children and how many, and it's really the vast majority, of children grow up well and healthy and well-adjusted because their parents love them. And what you also don't see is that story about the kids who remain faithful, who are part of the church, who understand the gifts God gives them, who are faithful Christians and take part in their faith and make use of the sacraments and the gifts of God and the Word in the church. But what we always hear is they're so expensive, they're all quitting church, it's all a disaster, they're all lazy, they think too much of themselves. Well, maybe some of them do. They're sinners just like the rest of us. But they're also a blessing, and we dare not forget that, ever.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Now, bear in mind, this comes from the newspapers in England. Ultimately, when you get to the end of the story, do you know what it says?
I do not. What's it say?
Don't worry, most of the cost is covered by the government.
Well, which just means you're paying the government to do it in one way or the other. You know, there's no escaping
it. So have more kids, get even with the rest of them.
Well, you know, that's got all the motivations in the wrong place there. But, you know, ultimately, as a parent and as a Christian and as a pastor, you know, it's a challenge to have kids. It's not easy all the time. It's not all bubblegum and rainbows and kittens playing, and, you know, those kind of things. But there are those moments where everything is just right. Everybody is well and healthy and faithful and happy. And there's nothing that can beat it in the world. So how much does it cost? Well, it costs as much as it costs. And you find a way to take care of your kids. And that's a good thing to do.
Since we're talking about money, in a sense, do you think money makes people happy?
Well,
do you think only people without money ask that question?
Could be. And thought about it that way. You know, money can't buy you happiness. Well, if I had more, I bet I might think differently. I think in one sense, you know, in the very earthly sense, you know, that things make me happy. Well, money can make me happy that way, if buying a new car every year and having a bigger house and getting to spend my money on stuff. Well, yeah, there's a sort of earthly happiness, temporal happiness there. But if you're talking about happy in the sort of biblical sense of blessed and a full life and having what God gives and understanding where things come from and being a good steward of all you have, money's not going to do that for you because it's not yours to begin with.
Well, there's a website called ASAP Science.
Okay.
All right. And this website has examined this question about money and happiness. And here's a little audio from the video they put up on the web. Listen to this, and they'll tell me what you think.
While many of us go through life with the pursuit of money on our minds, we're often told that money can't buy happiness. But what truth is there in this saying? Is there a correlation between money and happiness? And if so, how can we use it to our advantage? Humans are very sensitive to change. When we get a raise or commission, we really enjoy it. But we adapt at incredible speeds to our new wealth. Some studies have shown that in North America, additional income beyond $75,000 a year ceases to impact day-to-day happiness. In fact, people who win the lottery often report becoming extremely unhappy. They often end up spending all the money, going into debt, and experienced ruined social relationships. So surely money can't really buy happiness. Well, recent studies suggest that the problem may actually be in the way that we spend money. Instead of buying things for yourself, try giving some of it to other people and see how you feel. Studies show that people who spend their money on others feel happier. And while people who spend it on themselves don't necessarily become less happy, their happiness is unchanged. This same principle has been tested on teams and organizations as well. One experiment showed that instead of an organization writing a large check to a charity, dividing the amount up amongst employees and allowing them to contribute to a charity of their choosing increased their job satisfaction. Similarly, individuals that spent monetary incentives on each other as opposed to themselves increased not only job satisfaction, but improved team performance and sales. This has been seen in both sales and sports teams. Almost everywhere we look in the world, we see that giving money or gifts to others is positively correlated with happiness. Interestingly, the specific way the money is spent on others isn't important. From trivial gifts to major charity efforts, spending something on others is the important aspect in increasing your happiness. The emotional rewards of pro-social spending are even detectable at the neural level. If you are going to spend the money on yourself, try to go after experiences as opposed to material things. Traveling or going to an event is more impactful for the vast majority of people in the long run. And while you're saving up for these big experiences, don't forget about the daily joys in life. Many small, frequent pleasures help to get you through the days and encourage change, which stimulates the brain. Instead of buying a $3,000 rug that provides a one-time experience for the next 10 years, a $5 latte with friends will be different each time, offering unique access to happiness opportunities. Though money is unlikely to be the main source of happiness in our lives, it certainly has the potential to make some things easier and complicate others. But at the end of the day, it can buy happiness, if spent in the right way.
Well, what do you think?
I think he hits on a lot of very good points there. Underlying all that, I think we might summarize that in a comparison to just how we're supposed to live our life in general. Am I supposed to concentrate on me, myself, and I, and nobody else? Or do I use the gifts God gives me for the benefit of others? Do I turn myself into my God and that sort of self-idolatry that breaks all the commandments, you know, because it breaks the first one? Or do I spend my Christian life in good work for my brothers and sisters, whether it's monetary or not? See, this is the same conversation we had about having kids.
Exactly.
Is it about me or is it about someone else? And when it's about someone else, we always, hopefully, can see that there's someone else who loves me. There's someone else who does good things for me. There's someone else who gives good things to me, so I share them with others. And that ultimate someone else we're talking about here is God. Is Christ, how we know God. So it's a very Christian way to look at this. You know, if I just spend all my money on me, well, then I'm sinning. If I use it for good works for the sake of my brothers and sisters in the faith and my family and my friends, that's a good work. That's godly stewardship of the money God gives you.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Do you not marvel, Chaplain Wise, that science is now affirming all these things we've known for thousands of years now from Scripture?
And someone paid to have a study to find out stuff we already knew.
Yeah.
Speaking of how you spend your money, what we know from our own life, what Christians know from our own life in the faith, what we know from the Scriptures, what we know from our experience of receiving the gifts of God, His grace, His mercy, His salvation, those sort of quote-unquote churchly things that we receive through the Word and the sacraments, in addition to the worldly things, those first article gifts of creation, of which money is a part, these studies are just affirming what we already know to be true as faithful Christians.
Well, if God the Father Almighty is maker of heaven and earth, you think we ought to follow His rules?
Well, since He says so, that would be a good idea.
Well, seems we haven't learned that lesson yet, in spite of thousands and thousands of years.
Oh, you mean we're still sinners?
Well, yeah, but we tend to be new and creative.
Yeah,
we're innovative, especially
in
this modern age.
We are that, and see, that's another issue that goes with all this, you know. How much do children cost? What can I get for my kids? How can we make insurance better? How can we make government better so it pays and we don't? How can I do more with my money? How can we make progress, right?
Yeah.
Because we're progressing, we're going somewhere, we're getting better. Well, what's the goal of all this progress? When do we get there? See, it's completely devoid of the way God speaks about life, what life looks like, and how it's difficult. And I'm not here to be a killjoy or to make everybody miserable, but if you look at the Scriptures and you look at how God talks about how life is going to be as we get nearer and nearer the end, that's not progress, folks.
I love history. I consume a lot of stuff, whether it be, you know, books, magazine articles. And on Netflix last night, I discovered a little series called Drive Through History. And it was, turns out, shock of shocks, it was in part put out by folks on the family.
Okay.
So it has a very good, you know, when it comes to like Paul on Mars Hill, the presumption isn't that he was some madman chasing after a dead Jew that, you know, didn't rise from the dead, but they actually believe that,
just,
you know,
making it all up as he went along,
exactly.
You know, like you see sometimes.
But he was in the Pantheon. This is, you know, he's been going through ancient Greece and Rome, and one of the programs specifically details the missionary journeys of Paul in the different places and how they all relate. And the guy stands there and he looks up at the Pantheon, which is the oldest building that still exists from ancient Rome, that engineers today still marvel at how they did this thing, because the whole dome is concrete, poured concrete, and there's not one bit of rebar in it. You know, as a guy that used to do plan review and building inspections and stuff, I marvel at this too.
It wouldn't pass safety inspection today, would
and
it?
And that's what he says. He said you couldn't build it today because you couldn't get the plans approved.
And it's only stood for how long? Seems to be pretty good.
1,800 years.
Yeah, I think the plans were just fine. And interestingly enough, about the Pantheon, about many of the buildings from the Roman Empire and in Rome especially that still stand today, you know why they're still standing, don't you?
No, but building inspectors.
Well, yeah, no. They didn't have building inspectors on the front end.
Yeah, but you got it right or they killed you. It was a great building program.
But those buildings are still standing is because they came to be used as churches.
Especially the Pantheon, yes.
The Pantheon is a church. You know, it's got an altar. It's got the whole nine yards. It was converted from its pagan use as a temple to all the gods to a Christian church. And you see that throughout the Roman Empire, these buildings that were converted to use by the church had a much better chance of making it through history than the other ones. How many full-fledged, operational, in-use temples of Jupiter are there still?
Not many.
I'm not sure there are any.
Not many.
How many temples to any of the Roman gods are still standing? Well, a column here, a column there, a foundation, maybe. But the Pantheon is there because it's still in use as a church. There are services celebrated even there now. And to bring this back around to, you know, sort of what we were talking about, this the history of the world, the progress of the world, the things we were talking about before, is so intertwined and so connected with the church on earth and the church militant, as we call it, those of us here on earth still in the life of faith now, waiting for the life of the world to come, has had such a remarkable benefit and been such a great blessing to the world. Much of our society today just doesn't know it, just doesn't realize it, and thinks, oh, well, church doesn't mean anything. It's made no contributions whatsoever. Well, yeah. Well, the Pantheon wouldn't still be there if it wasn't for the church. That hospital you go to wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the church.
Well, those evil crusaders in the Holy Land, yes. Look what they wrought upon society.
Yeah, they invented the hospital. Go figure. The idea of a school where your kids can go and learn, it wouldn't be there if it wasn't for the church. And we could go on and on and on. And that's kind of tangential. But it comes into this idea of how we take care of the gifts God gives us, whether it's money or whether it's the community hospital or whether it's the building where we gather for worship or the home or whatever. When we understand these things as gifts from God and the church takes up its churchly authority to love its neighbor and to hand out and distribute the blessings of God through word and sacrament and works of mercy, good things happen. And the Pantheon is a standing example of that right now.
A phrase that I have come to adopt for frequent usage is that we live in an age that is probably best defined as an age of the tyranny of language.
Okay. So what do you mean by that?
Well, what means something to you, some call it postmodernism, but I call it the tyranny of language because we use it to control other people. What used to be understood, as you described it, as loving your neighbor today is pretty much almost anything anti-biblical justified as being biblical. And we're loving our neighbor. Sadly, in some cases, they use that as a verb, which we won't go into, but...
Yeah, let's leave that one alone.
But you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I think I understand.
You know, anything
what you
goes is loving your neighbor.
Yeah.
Rules, just right. Loving
if
your neighbor.
If it's what I think is best, it can't be wrong. if I want to do this, see, it might be the tyranny of language, and it might masquerade under love your neighbor sort of language. But ultimately, my perspective is that all those things turn around to it's what I say, and don't get in my way. Don't talk about your beliefs. If they offend me, you can't believe that.
Individualism in the extreme.
Absolutely. Know. It's about me and my self-actualization. Oh, had that phrase never been invented. It's about me and what I think and what I need. And don't you dare say otherwise, because if I want to knock over 7-Elevens and rape and pillage and plunder, God made me this way. Who are you to say that's wrong? If I want to marry four different people at the same time, God made me this way. Who are you to say that's wrong? If I want to, you know, do immoral things or take your pick, you can say God made me this way. And all of a sudden, the conversation's supposed to stop. I'm supposed to say, oh, that's wonderful. So it turns around onto self, and then people use the tyranny of language to quiet language.
And I call it the tyranny of language because they have stolen the language of the church and adapted it to their own purposes.
Certainly. And that's not new either. No. You know, it's secular heresy, sort of, if you want to use that term. I just thought it up. I don't know how well it'll hold up.
No, that works. Yeah.
But it's heresy to say, well, God made me this way. Pick your sin, you know, so I can indulge in it. But it's so disjointed and removed from any life in the church, and so many people are, that the society says, oh, well, then it must be okay. How can that be wrong? It looks so nice. They're such nice people. And they may very well be. But when you take the Word of God and the gifts of God and the church out of the life of the people, that's what happens. The gifts of God get perverted and corrupted, and all kinds of bad things happen.
So how does a church that once was an observed authority, that has now fallen out of that respected place of authority, still, you know, speak to the world, speak truth to the world?
Well, it does it the way it always has. It does it like we're doing here. We're sitting, talking into these microphones, and to me, miraculously, this goes all over St. Louis and all over the world.
Well, yeah, it's everywhere.
And people hear the word. We do it like we always have. When the church gathers for its worship on Sunday mornings, and the word goes forth and does what it says it does because it's the work of God. At Merrimack Bluffs, we have worship on Sunday mornings, and we have a devotion on Wednesdays, and we have Bible studies on Mondays and Tuesdays, and there's one on Thursdays. All of those sorts of things that people do in their churches, that people do in their homes, that people do in their communities, the word goes forth. See, sometimes we think it depends too much on me. Oh, that was the worst sermon I ever preached. Well, did you preach Jesus and his salvation? Yeah, but I don't. Well, then you don't worry so much about yourself. In one sense, we're not that important. The Spirit does his work when you preach the Word of God and engage people in a godly way, in a loving way, and do good works, and then the Word goes out. Is the church viewed as authority in as big a way as it used to be? No. Are there disadvantages to that? Yes, because it means we have to be more zealous, we have to be more creative, we have to be more sure and confident when we do speak and engage in the public forum. But there are also advantages as well. It also means I don't have the pressure to conform so much to a world that says, well, we're going to do it this way, and the church is the authority, and we need you on our side. We can be our own people. We can be God's people. And nobody's going to be surprised by that. That doesn't mean they're going to like us, but it does free us to be who we are as God's people so that we can send his word forth. And just like God says in Isaiah 55, when the word goes out, it does what it does, and it doesn't return void. It accomplishes the purpose for which God sends it.
But don't we need to help it along a little bit?
Say that when the music starts,
well,
wouldn't
that gives
you?
You something to think about during the break, doesn't
okay.
it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Also, women in combat. What does that say about God's good created order? We'll talk about that when we get back as well. Stick around. Welcome back. It's the Ask the Pastor program on the Messenger of Good News Worldwide, KFUO. Chaplain Keith Wise, who serves at Lutheran Senior Services Merrimack Bluffs location, is with us this morning. And tell you what, we're going to take a phone call, and then I want you to tell us about Lutheran Senior Services and what goes on and the fine work that you do there. Okay. But let's grab a call from David first, who wants to talk about the authority of the church. David, good morning.
Hi, Roland. I did want to say, I called a few days ago. I want to apologize. Sometimes I can come across offensive, but I got so many thoughts in my head that come out a little bit offensive sometimes. So, but I don't mean any personal.
All is forgiven. Fear not.
Well, you mentioned about authority of the church, and it's just my observation that when you talk about authority of the church, I think in today's modern time, there's no such thing, because there's so many denominations, the way I look at it, that people would say, what are you talking about, authority of the church? Which one are you talking about? One on the corner, or one down the street, or the one across town? Another point I want to bring up, a woman called yesterday, and I thought it was so appropriate from when I called a couple of days ago, that she said she was moving down south, and she didn't know, she couldn't find any LMS churches down there because they're mostly Baptist and Pentecostal. That was the point I brought up about there's only a few churches that I know of that believe in the real presence, Catholic, Lutheran, Anglican, and maybe Greek Orthodox. So if you're a good Lutheran, and I know Lutheran churches teach like the invisible church, in reality, if there was no Lutheran church, hypothetical, say, down in Louisiana, you could not really go to a different church that didn't believe in the real presence, because that would violate what you've been taught from a young child. Isn't that true?
Yeah, you don't want to go to a church where their teachings and beliefs about the sacrament are different than your own, yes?
Okay, then that was my point. This theory about the invisible church, who decides what a kosher church is? What's the definition of a kosher church? If it goes against what Lutheran theology teaches, you've only got a small segment to go to because of the sacrament of communion.
Right. Well, let me try to take parts of both of those things. We'll start with the last one first. It is true that there are places in our country, there are places in the world where it's difficult to find a Lutheran church that is confessional and strong and has a presence where you can find one anywhere you want to go. When it comes to the invisible church versus the visible church, I'm not sure that's a helpful way to think about it, and here's why. Those terms tend to be used to help us understand where the church is. And maybe that's the ultimate question here. Where is the church? Is the church in an Anglican church? Is the church in the Roman Catholic church? Is the church in these various denominations? Well, here's the answer. The church is where the people of God are gathered around Christ to receive the gifts of Christ as God has said he gives them to us. So, do folks who don't believe in the true presence have the sacrament? Well, probably not. Do folks who don't believe in infant baptism have the gifts of baptism? Probably not. Do folks who don't believe in either of those sacraments at all have the gifts they give? Well, no, they don't. So is the church really there receiving the gifts of God gathered around Christ? Well, probably not. So, could a Lutheran in good conscience go to the Baptist church? Well, there's just no other church here. Well, you know what the answer to that is? It's time to start one. Well, I can't do that. It's just me and my family. You know, maybe I can find two or three other people. That's not a church, is it? How many people does Jesus say it takes for him to be present? Well, the obvious answer is where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I among them. But also, I think it can take just one. What's God say in Genesis 28? What's Jesus say in Matthew 28? And what does Hebrews 13 remind us? God has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee, and lo, I am with you always to the end of the age. So if you're in a place that doesn't have a church that believes like you believe, whether it's Lutheran or Roman Catholic or Anglican, pick your denomination. If you're in a church that doesn't believe like you believe, in a place that doesn't believe like you believe, well, maybe it's time for you to start that church. Does that mean you're automatically going to have a building and a pastor and a staff and all that kind of stuff? No, it doesn't. But with time and with prayer and with faithfulness and commitment, you may never have a big church, but you can have a church there.
The two or three people that you brought up doesn't really say anything about leadership, pastors, like you said, deacons, or you could not have it because the way I understand it, who can forgive sins? I mean, in other words, what I'm saying is a pastor will get up there and say, you read the statement about I'm a poor, miserable sinner, healed by the authority of Christ, I forgive you your sins.
Right.
I couldn't get up there and say that.
No, you could not, but you could in a situation where you've done your very best to find a pastor or a chaplain to come and to serve you at least on an occasional basis, and nobody says yes, and nobody says they can come, and everybody says, no, we're not going to do it. You know what happens then? You get your church together, and as the church, you've been given the authority of the keys. That means you can forgive sins. The church can. As the church, you've been given the office of the holy ministry. As the church, you've been given the word and the sacraments. You've been given all these things by Christ. The church has. So two or three people gathered together and all the so-called bigwigs turn you down. They won't give you money to start a church. The pastors all say no. Nobody would come. I think that's hard to believe that that would be just be you're on your own completely. But say, hypothetically, that's what happens. You know what you do then? Of the two or three of you there, you get together, and by prayer and by asking the aid of the Holy Spirit and the gifts, you ordain one of you, one of the men among you, to be your pastor. Now, you're not going to be an LCMS church automatically like that, or a Wisconsin Synod, or an Anglican Church, a North America Church. You're going to be the church in that place, and you're going to be a one congregation denomination, but you're still going to be the church. And if you keep working, and you keep teaching, and you keep praying, and you keep receiving the gifts of God that way, guess what? That connection to the larger sort of church bodies may come about, but it doesn't make you any less church. See, if the church won't, the institutional church, for lack of a better word, because it's redundant, you know, the church is institutional, but if the denominational people won't serve you and you can't get a pastor to serve you, make somebody among you your pastor so you can be served. Because all those gifts that the church gives out, forgiveness, grace, mercy, the sacraments, preaching, teaching, those are all given to the church. So the church has the authority to ordain a man in their midst who is able to distribute and to preach and to teach, to have a pastor there.
Wouldn't there be a litmus test? What if the man you're anticipating to ordain believes some strange, weird doctrine that nobody else holds to?
Then you don't ordain him.
Okay.
He's not really part of your church anyway.
All right.
If he's teaching false doctrine. See,
then what if you don't have a person in there? One time I went to an Anglican church years ago, my wife and I, and a woman got up there to preach. We walked right out.
Okay.
See, those are the strange differences in denominations. That's why the word authority doesn't mean much anymore to people, because everybody interprets the scriptures to their own liking.
And I think you're right. And the situation we're talking about is purely hypothetical. You know, I don't think there's anywhere in the country where you're so far away, so removed, you can't find someone who would at least serve you on an occasional basis. The other part of it, is the church's authority lessened in the eyes of the world because it's splintered into so many denominations? Well, of course it is, because the Anglican Church will say this, and the Episcopalian Church, which is technically part of the Anglican Church, will say that, and then they'll fight over it amongst themselves. The Lutheran churches will say A, B, and C, but we can never all say A, B, and C together. The Roman Catholic Church will say something. So you get where I'm going. It's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now, the church could reclaim some of that some of that authority, I think, by a return and a commitment to prayer for unity in the church. Now, I'm not saying, oh, well, let's just all get together and have a big service together and celebrate communion and come up with a statement and say the Holy Spirit told us so. No, that's not what we're talking about. But where the church does agree across the board, where the churches who do agree about issues can witness and confess that truth and those scriptural truths, well, yes, we should stand together to do so. Yes, we should engage the public united as brothers and sisters in the faith, even if not as brothers and sisters in the same denomination.
Okay, well, hey, I appreciate your time and patience. And once again, Rowan, sorry for saying seeming offensive.
No, you not at all.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, David.
Thanks, David. Appreciate the phone call. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. You know, here's the solution. Handy-dandy home communion kits. Individually, hermetically sealed. Now, I say that tongue-in-cheek.
You say that like a joke, but it's out there somewhere.
It's out there somewhere. But look, here I have in my hand an article that comes off the wire copy from this morning, from AP Wire, reporting from Vatican City. I don't know if you saw this story or not.
I have not yet.
Pope Benedict XVI put Catholic Church leaders on notice Thursday, saying that social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter aren't virtual worlds that they can ignore, but rather are very real worlds they must engage if they want to spread the faith to the next generation.
Yeah, I have seen the Pope's on Twitter. You know?
Yeah. So you just log on. Not open. You go to church in your underwear. You don't have to dress up. You don't have to just log on, sit in front of your screen, handy dandy home communion kit. The pastor says the words of institution. You hold it up in front of the screen. Et voila.
Well, not voila.
Et voila de sacrament.
No. Well, it sounds awful convenient. And I'm sure there are people who, you know, there is that virtual church. You can find that on the internet where you can do that.
Oh, yeah, and even better, it doesn't have to be live. You just do it on demand.
Yeah, whenever you feel
voila,
like it.
The sacrament.
But what do you really have there? It's church-y. It might even be church-ly. It might have the air and the smell and the feel of church. But what is the church? It's the children of God gathered around God together to receive the gifts of God in the person of Jesus Christ. Now, you might be virtually gathered around Jesus at your computer, and you certainly in Twitter and Facebook and all those places, can you post scripture verses and share the gospel and all those things? Absolutely. But what's true and what will always be true is there is no substitution for being physically in the same place with other believers. True, we're all in the body of Christ. We have the communion of saints with the saints who've gone before us into glory, and we're united there. But that expression always has and always does find itself expressed clearly and graciously in the people of God being together in the same place. Now, you know, it's interesting because this is not so far removed from, you know, how do we bring church to people who can't come? You know, we don't just send a card and a wafer and a cup of wine in the mail to the people who, because of illness or age, can't get out and come to church. No, the church comes to them. You know, the pastor and maybe some of the elders and some of the members bring church to them. You know, that's how it's always been. Not because there wasn't a way to get it there without me having to go. You know, there's always been mail. There's always been the delivery man. There's always been things that weren't electronic. But the church never used that. The church comes to the people who can't come to the church because it's about that unity together. Because church is not just about my spirit and it's not just about my soul. It's about my body, too. There's a physical element to worship and to being joined together with believers in the same place to receive the same gifts at the same time from the same God that you cannot create in a virtual world.
So there will never be a virtual chaplain at Lutheran Senior Services.
I pray God just there will press, not.
Just push the screen up alongside the bed and et voila, chaplain.
Well, the flip side
I was
of this,
watching a Canadian guy last night. I'm sorry I'm stuck on that.
Who are you today? The flip side of that is one thing that is going to happen out at Merrimack Bluffs where I work is we are soon going to have the capability of broadcasting our worship services to people who live in our community who cannot come to the chapel. Now, that's good. I'm not saying watching church on TV is bad or doing churchly things or your computer is bad. It's not. You're going to get the word. But what we're not going to quit doing when we have that capability, we're not going to quit visiting those people. We're not going to quit taking church to them. We're not going to break that bond we have with a computer or a television screen. We're still going to nurture it and bring the church to them and be there with them in the same place. That's vitally important in the church.
But is there a distinction between Paul writing letters and someone communicating, the church communicating by way of the internet?
I don't think there's a whole lot of difference there. But notice who Paul is writing letters to.
Churches.
With the exception of Romans, I think, Paul is writing letters to churches he's been to and founded. He knows these people. He visits them on, you know, he tries his best to get back. What's he say in so many letters?
Right.
I'm coming to see you. I know you want to see me. I'm
Shape
planning on coming. Yeah. And before I get there, fix these problems, please.
Yeah.
So there was never this, oh, I'm writing letters so I don't have to come to see you. It's I'm writing you a letter because I can't, because I'm under arrest, because I'm a prisoner for the Church of God. But his goal is always to be there with them physically just as well as being there spiritually. You can't divorce those two completely and still have the church, I don't think.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO, at KFUO.org. You want to take a moment, since we were talking about LSS, to tell the folks about what
sure.
you do in your work as a chaplain and what services LSS offers?
Well, I serve as a chaplain for Lutheran Senior Services. That's what LSS stands for.
I'm over 50 now. I'm one of those guys.
No, it won't be long. And so the community I serve at is Merrimack Bluffs out in Baldwin. And at Merrimack Bluffs, we have what's called a continuing care retirement community. Everything from patio homes, which are like large duplexes or villas, apartments for independent living. We have assisted living. There's assisted living memory care. And then we have full-fledged nursing care with memory care there at that level as well. So it runs the full spectrum of what a retired person could need as far as independence all the way up to being relying on others to take care of all of your needs. And we have that at several communities throughout St. Louis, throughout Missouri, and even into Illinois. And for information for all of those things, you can look at lssliving.org. As the chaplain there, I serve with Deaconess Gail Truesdale, and our goal is to serve the people who are there. About 25 to 30% of our residents are Lutheran, but we're the chaplains for everybody there. So we serve them in love. We do our best to help keep them connected to their parishes. We address issues and help them with problems they have. And we have worship on Sunday morning. We have devotion on Wednesday. We have Bible studies, all those things that a parish would have, we've got. But we've got the benefit, I think, of being right there. It's like the congregation lives at church. So we very much personal one-on-one care for folks in addition to the larger community and what's the word I'm looking for, larger scale gathering sorts of things that a church would do, we do too.
So you have some experience what David was talking about, folks that are not Lutheran.
Absolutely.
That need the church.
Absolutely.
And you serve them as well.
Without question. If you live at one of our places, we're there to serve you and to help you and to reveal God's love to you.
So are you kind of like Father Mulcahy and MASH, where one day you do a Baptist service, the next day, or are you a Lutheran chaplain?
I'm a Lutheran chaplain. My approach has been, and it has served me well, to be a Lutheran chaplain for everybody there and to encourage people of different traditions to express their traditions and remain engaged with them, because that's where the exciting part comes. I'm not there to make you a good little Lutheran, but I'm not going to avoid my Lutheran-ness. You know, it's what I took vows to at my ordination, to teach the scriptures, to be pledged to the confessions. So I don't disregard any of that. But I don't expect you to disregard what you've been brought up to believe and how your faith life has formed you either. And that's really where we have the most fun theologically. It's where we have the most growth spiritually, because people aren't afraid to be who they are as Christians. And in an interesting way, it kind of ties back to what David was calling. Eventually, we find those places where, as Christians, we can speak with authority as the church, because this is what the church believes and teaches and confesses, and we can be a witness to the world with those things when everybody is faithful and honest about their beliefs.
Before I let you get away, I mentioned going to the break about women serving in combat. Just off the top of your head, any thoughts about this? A good thing, bad thing, indifferent thing, don't care thing?
Well, let me put it this way. I don't think it's a good thing, and I don't think it's progress. Not because women are weak or women are incapable or women aren't talented or women can't kill enemies just as efficiently as a man can. No. But what it reflects is that disconnect from a biblical worldview, and we see it taking on reality in the world in which we live. Eve was created as a suitable helpmate to Adam. The sexes complement one another. And in that sense, this whole "I can do it just as well as you can" may be true, but what is your vocation and what are you called to? So it's just an extension of what's happening in the bigger society. We determine who can do things simply by can you perform the functions rather than is this a godly thing which God has created and called you to do. So it gets hairy and gets interesting, but that's my gut first reaction to it.
One person in the Christianity Today that was commenting on this, just to synopsize their point, we've got about 2 minutes before the break, was that we are Adamic in how we approach this, because Adam was essentially about as resolute as a worm when it came to the apple. And we have been, and then you look through the Old Testament when you come across characters like Deborah and Jael. It is because men have failed to stand for their first article created responsibility that ultimately women then have to step into the breach and do something. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the best way to go about business.
It doesn't. What we're talking about here, all of this, you know, when you get down to root causes, is effects of the fall into sin and the roles of men and women as God created us have been corrupted and perverted, and we don't understand it perfectly well. But what we do understand is that original sin is called Adam's sin when it was Eve who ate the apple because of this. Adam is the first created. Eve is his helper, is a gift to him from God. He's got responsibility for her. And we know he's standing there while she's being tempted. And what he's supposed to do is say, "Let's get away from here, hon. This is a bad place. That serpent is lying to you." And instead he says, "Sure, I'll take a bite. I'd like some too."
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and yeah. So it's all been messed up since then. So does that say, well, it's messed up, let's take advantage of the messed upness as much as we can and just jump with both feet into it? Nah, that's probably not the best approach, but I think that's the approach we're taking.
So you can be like God is not the question. The question is, should you be like
God?
If you can do something, you can, but should you?
Yeah, everything is permissible, but not everything's a good idea, to paraphrase Paul.
There's Paul again.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Real quick again, as we let you go here, take the last 30 seconds, and if folks are listening and they have loved ones or they themselves are considering, you know, retirement options, how they can get in touch with the good folks at LSS?
Well, to get in touch with the folks at LSS, the best place to go is to the website lssliving.org. And while there, you can look up Merrimack Bluffs, where I serve. And if you want to call Merrimack Bluffs, Adam Baldwin, the phone number is 636-861-0600.
Chaplain Keith Wise, as he said, you can find him at the Merrimack Bluffs location of Lutheran Senior Services. serving there as chaplain. I guess the other question is, how many locations are there?
Oh, you would ask me that. Lots.
Several. Several. That's anywhere between three.
That keeps me from getting it wrong. Lots.
Check the website. You'll get more certain information there. Thank you, my friend. Great having you on the program again.
Great to be here again.
We're back tomorrow. It's Friday. Who knows what could happen on a Friday? Be safe till then. Bye-bye.
Listen to the Bible Study Monday through Friday at this same time. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is heard weekdays on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.